Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 25th, 2017. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley arrives in Juba and meets with President Kiir but does not mince her words.
I didn't come here to talk. I came here to basically say the time for action is now. We're not waiting anymore. We need to see a change, and we need to see it right away. And there's nothing that they can say at this point. We have lost trust.
On the same day, a military spokesman announces the sentencing of more than 20 soldiers accused of murder, rape, and other crimes.
The summary of crimes we heard range from murder, embezzlement, loss of rifle, rape, and random shooting.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, is in South Sudan during an exclusive interview with the U.N.'s Radio Miraya and USAID-funded iRadio. Nikki Haley had strong words for the leaders of South Sudan.
I didn't come here to talk. I came here to basically say the time for action is now. We're not waiting anymore. We need to see a change, and we need to see it right away. And there's nothing that they can say at this point. We have lost trust in the government, and we now need to regain that trust. And the only way to regain that trust is through the actions of taking care of all of the people. President Kiir is the president of everyone, not just one tribe, not just one group. And in order to be a leader, you have to be willing to take care of all of your people.
Ambassador Haley says her government cares about the people of South Sudan, and the Trump administration is very keen on the events unfolding in South Sudan.
President Trump and this administration deeply care about the people of South Sudan, and we're not going to stop until we feel like they're getting cared for the way they're supposed to.
She says the purpose of her visit to South Sudan is to tell South Sudanese leaders that the people of their country are suffering. She called her meeting with President Kiir very cordial.
We had a very frank conversation. In fairness to him, he listened. He was not defensive. And what I told him was that the United States didn't want to hear a lot of talk. I wasn't here to listen to what he had to say. I was here to say that the United States is at a cross point of it's not about the talk, it's about the action. And we have to see action. We have to see a willingness of the government and the military to stop the violence and stop the abuses that are happening in this country.
The top U.S. diplomat also spoke directly to the South Sudanese people, saying her government will continue to help them.
You know, the one thing we want to tell the people of South Sudan, we are not going to forget you. We're not going to put these issues away. We're not going to turn a blind eye to them. We've heard the stories. We know the actions. We know the tragedy. And we know that healing is going to take a very long time. But the United States is not going to give up on the people of South Sudan.
That's Nikki Haley, the U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, speaking to reporters at a joint press conference on the premises of the United Nations mission in South Sudan in Juba. This audio is courtesy of the UN's Radio Miraya. Back to Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley visited the offices of the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF. After the meeting, Kiir's senior advisor and special envoy, Nyal Deng Nyal, told the reporters that Haley had what he termed constructive and fruitful discussions with the President Kiir.
The discussions revolved basically around three main themes: the revitalization process of IGAD, the issue of the permanent ceasefire or the cessation of hostilities, and issues of humanitarian access.
Last month, during the UN General Assembly in New York, Haley said she wanted to salvage the fragile 2015 peace deal that collapsed in July last year when a fresh wave of deadly fighting erupted in Juba. After what, regional body IGAD launched a fresh effort to revitalize the agreement. After meeting Kiir, Haley visited the UN Protection of Civilians site in Juba that shelters nearly 40,000 internally displaced persons who fled their homes since the conflict broke out in 2013 and have been unable to return to their homes due to insecurity. Nyal says Haley told President Kiir to allow aid agencies access to the thousands of South Sudanese who require life-saving assistance.
She also raised some concerns relating to problems of humanitarian access, but at the same time also she acknowledged that there has been some improvement in humanitarian access, but urged the government to do more.
Nyal says Mr. Kiir urged the U.S. government to do more to improve relations between Juba and Khartoum, including help in sorting out the final status of the disputed Abyei region, which he described as complicated.
There were some very complicated issues, very complex matters that arose during the negotiations that led to the conclusion of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005. And the government of the United States played an instrumental role in helping break some of the deadlocks, especially the issues of Abyei. So it is in the same spirit that the president has been urging the ambassador to keep the United States engaged.
Yesterday in Addis Ababa at the African Union building, Haley said, quote, "When you look at South Sudan, you have to really think hard before you pull U.S. aid, because President Kiir doesn't care if we pull U.S. aid. He doesn't care if his people suffer," end of quote. She said the U.S. would try and see exactly what will move President Kiir so he does take that moral high ground and start to look at creating a safe position for his people. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Ambassador Nikki Haley's trip comes at a crucial time for South Sudan. That's according to Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project. Adeba says while in South Sudan, Haley should send a strong message that increases financial pressure on the leaders responsible for the violence.
It's a significant visit in terms of the weight of the individuals traveling to South Sudan. You have a member of the cabinet, a full member of the cabinet, traveling to South Sudan. This is the very first time. You have the deputy director in the National Security Council for African Affairs going in. You have the commander of the U.S. forces in Africa, AFRICOM, I believe, going to on this visit. So it's a heavyweight visit designed probably to send a very strong message, I think, or to the significance that the Trump administration is now attaching to Sudan, to South Sudan.
Would you say that this is a symbolic visit?
This is likely not a symbolic visit. Most of what will happen will be private and indoors, and we will probably get the public statements that that may differ from what's said in private with South Sudan government officials. But what we know is we expect or we think that it's going to be the delivery of a very strong message about the need to adhere to the peace process. There's been too much talking and it's getting us nowhere with regard to, coming to the peace table. So what really needs to happen is the ambassador should send a strong message and call for a strong message that escalates financial pressures on individuals and the networks who are behind the perpetration of this violence and who are displaying intransigence to reaching a peaceful solution to the conflict.
What do you mean by financial pressures? Are you saying that they should expand the sanctions that they've already put in place?
Right. So when you look at what's happening in South Sudan right now, the missing element really is leverage, and how will or should the U.S. build a leverage on the warring parties in South Sudan? And I think the way to build that leverage is to increase the financial pressures on individuals and their networks. Sanctions is the word you would use. to ensure that there is a price for intransigence. At the moment, everyone is getting away scot-free, and it's having a devastating toll on the people of South Sudan.
Ambassador Haley was in Ethiopia before making her way to South Sudan, and I noticed you write that she should also focus on the work of IGAD and revitalizing the peace process. But what more can be done on that front?
Look, when you look at IGAD itself, IGAD is so divided. There's so many divisions within IGAD that emanate from the foreign policy stances of the countries that make up IGAD, and to some extent that impact the peaceful a peaceful solution to South Sudan, in that if each country's interest is being projected and to the detriment of the people of South Sudan. So it looks like unless the foreign policy interests of the IGAD countries align, then there's going to be a peace agreement. And the peace agreement in South Sudan should not be held hostage by the divisions within IGAD. We've seen that IGAD for the last 1 year has been quite ineffective, really, in finding a solution to the debacle that ensued when the peace agreement unfolded in July last year. So by that, I mean that, you know, it's time that some pressure is also brought upon IGAD to have somebody for instance, maybe the African Union or the UN to sort of look over the activities of IGAD and work with IGAD to ensure that there's leverage on the countries on the mediators to ensure also that they push for the for a peaceful resolution.
That's Brian Adeba, the Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project, speaking to my colleague Ayin Bior from Washington. As Ambassador Nikki Haley visits the capital, South Sudan's army announced today it sentenced more than 20 soldiers for crimes including murder, rape, and indiscriminate shootings. An army spokesman says although most crimes were committed against fellow soldiers, the army is sending a clear message that South Sudanese soldiers are not above the law. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
22 soldiers were found guilty of committing various crimes. Military spokesmen did not say when the trials were carried out or when the soldiers were sentenced. Speaking at the event, South Sudan Defense and Veteran Affairs Minister Col Manyang stressed the importance of upholding the rule of law. Speaking in Arabic, Manyang said, soldiers will be punished just like any other criminals.
There must be order. There must be respect for the law. For without laws, there is no state and no one would feel secure. What we are doing here today is to keep law and order. If you commit a crime, you will be punished so that other would-be criminals can be deterred.
Judge Advocate First Lieutenant Lubaka Francis Hillary, who is Secretary of the SPLS General Court Martial, reads out the names of 38 accused soldiers in their verdicts. Military spokesman Brigadier General Lulroy Kwang says the soldiers were convicted on 6 different crimes committed in the past 4 months.
The summary of crimes we heard ranged from murder, embezzlement, loss of rifle, rape, and random shooting.
17 of the 38 soldiers were acquitted for lack of evidence. 20 soldiers were fined and given 2 to 3 years sentences for losing their assault rifles. 4 soldiers were convicted of murdering their colleagues. Out of those 4, one soldier has been sentenced to death by firing squad, which must be confirmed by South Sudan's Supreme Court. 3 soldiers ordered to pay blood money to the families of their victims. Most of these crimes took place over the last 2 to 3 months, but Kong says 2 soldiers were convicted of random shootings that took place just 2 days ago.
The day before yesterday, we heard an SPLA soldier at checkpoint who fired two shells of rocket-propelled grenade launcher. He has been dismissed from SPLA and sentenced to prison terms of 2 years in a civil jail. The second one fired several rounds at MI school. He was spotted speaking on phone, and after he was done with the phone, he threw it down and fired 30 rounds on his phone. And then after he had destroyed his phone, he started shooting randomly. He was apprehended. He has been dismissed from SPLA and sentenced to 1 year in prison.
Kwong says one soldier convicted of rape has been dismissed from the army, fined 35,000 South Sudanese pounds, and sentenced to 7 years in prison. Another soldier accused of abducting a civilian was acquitted due to lack of evidence. Kwong says the judgments are meant to send a clear message that criminal acts by soldiers will not be tolerated.
There is this perception among civilians and even the foreigners that SPLA soldiers act with impunity and they don't get punished. We are saying no, we do not allow that. We deal with culprits accordingly and according to SPLA rules and regulations.
The procedures leading to the conviction of the 22 soldiers were not made public. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a tragic boat incident leaves at least six South Sudanese dead. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you follow international politics?
I don't really follow international politics. I only do that when my dad is watching international politics.
Yes, I do follow international politics because they are mostly important. The world in general affects. Mm-hmm. Each country affects the other. So you have to know what is going on around the world.
Yes, of course. Because there is no isolation. This war is happening here in South Sudan. It's a matter of concern to regional countries and to international community as well.
I just live my life, you know. I just wake up every day and thank God for the life, not politics or anything else.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei State authorities say at least six people, including three children, died and several others are missing after a passenger motorboat capsized on Monday. The boat was crossing the River Nile from Bor in Jonglei State to Minkaman in Eastern Lake State. Eyewitnesses and relatives of the victims say the motorboat was overloaded. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Elijah Thongobor, secretary of the Bor Boat Owners Union, says the motorboat left Bor River Port at about 5 o'clock Monday evening and capsized shortly afterward, according to eyewitnesses. Thongobor says the boat has the capacity to carry 41 passengers, but was carrying well over 50 passengers at the time of the accident. 32-year-old Jacob Garangadiu, who was on the boat and survived, describes what happened.
I was just sitting in the front, so we were the first people to fall on water. Other people and luggages fell on us as well. I did not know how to swim. I don't have that skill, but there was a plastic bag that was near me. I jumped over it, and that is how I managed to survive. All the luggage, including my computer and motorbikes, you know, all that got drawn. I could not save anything.
30-year-old Emmanuel Tiuk Ajith is a relative of the three children who drowned in the Nile.
Our family members were going from Bor to Minkaman, where they intended to go to cattle camps. And unfortunately, they got drowned in the river, in which three children died in that accident. Yeah, the age of these children range from 5 years to 2 years. And among of them, two are girls and One is boy.
Ajit says the board owner must be held criminally responsible for the passengers who died.
Someone must be accountable for this, because they were not taken there for free. They have hired the boat. It is the owner of the boat should be accountable for this, because to load that infant innocently. If you know you have a boat, you should move it well. Seeing vulnerable people are there in the boat, you should know them. Those who have drawn now are those who could not know how to swim.
Bor Municipality Mayor Peter Akim says police have arrested more than 10 people, including the captain of the boat that capsized.
I have issued a lot of orders to stop them from these practices, but they have violated them. So now that people have lost their lives, we are not taking this for granted. We are taking it so seriously, and we are now punishing people. The CID personnel who were there on that day, all members of the boat union, they have been arrested because of their work.
Akim did not describe what charges the boat owner and members of the boat union are facing, but told the families who lost loved ones that the penalties will be stiff. Akim says authorities are still searching for the missing.
It's quite tragic, it's quite catastrophic, and it's not just only affecting you. The government is beside all of you as families who have lost loved ones, who will stay, will make sure that the investigation is comprehensive, who will keep you throughout the investigations.
Last month, traders in Bor lost a large shipment of food worth millions of Sudanese pounds after three commercial motorboats capsized and sank in the River Nile. For VOA News, I am Deng Haiding, reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we now move to Kenya, where the opposition told supporters to stay away from the polls on Thursday, after the Electoral Commission said the presidential rerun election would proceed as planned, and the Supreme Court said it was unable to hear a petition to postpone. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Announcing that his NASA opposition coalition would henceforth be turned into a resistance movement, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga gave final instructions to his followers regarding Thursday's rerun presidential election.
The first Kenyan to fight democracy and justice to hold vigil and prayers away from polling stations or just stay at home.
Odinga has argued throughout the election season that the Electoral Commission, or IEBC, has been compromised. The September 1st Supreme Court ruling that nullified the original August polls stated that the IEBC was responsible for irregularities and illegalities in the transmission of results. And although Odinga recently announced the withdrawal of his candidacy, arguing that the IEBC had not made improvements, the country has been awaiting his final announcement. Three registered voters petitioned Kenya's Supreme Court to have the election stopped, but it was not heard Wednesday morning as scheduled after Chief Justice David Maraga said that the court lacked a quorum to do so.
As the two of us cannot form a quorum, under Article 163.2 of the Constitution, this matter cannot therefore be heard this morning. It's accordingly adjourned to a date to be taken in the registry. Once again, my apologies to all of you.
Maraga explained that five of the court's seven judges were unable to attend, citing illness, being out of Nairobi, and unspecified reasons. He also stated that one of them, the Deputy Chief Justice, was not in attendance because she was dealing with events of the previous evening when armed men attacked her driver and car. IEBC Chairman Wafula Chebukati Wednesday announced that the elections would proceed, after last week threatening his departure if politicians did not start working together.
Fellow Kenyans, I wish to announce to you today, on behalf of the IEBC, that based on assurances given to this commission by the relevant authorities and security agencies, based on the progress that has been made in the commission, the elections are scheduled will go on tomorrow, the 26th of October, 2017.
Shadrach Kinyua, an opposition supporter who attended Wednesday's rally, agreed with Odinga that they should not attack those who choose to vote.
Do not bother them. Do not bother. He told us not to bother with them. Let them vote, but no fight.
But after Thursday's polls, the election may still not be over, said Odinga.
We shall mobilize all progressive forces in the country to ensure that a fresh free and fair presidential election is organized within 90 days.
One day at a time, here in Kenya. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The rerun of Kenya's presidential election has inflamed political tensions in the country, and there is evidence of that in the opposition stronghold of Kisumu. Protests against the Electoral Commission continued there Wednesday, a day before the vote. South Sudan in Focus tried to contact South Sudanese living in Kenya for comments on the election, but most were unwilling to speak on record because of uncertain security climate. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Kisumu.
Kisumu residents took to the streets for the fifth time this week, demanding reforms before Thursday's presidential rerun. They marched to the electoral body offices. Police fired tear gas to disperse protesters, throwing rocks and trying to block streets. Meanwhile, VOA could find no signs of preparations for Thursday's vote at polling stations around the city. Local media report that some electoral officers failed to show up for duty in Kisumu for fear of attack.
Why bringing the ballot box? In Kisumu, you don't want to vote. Let the IBC officials not come to Kisumu.
Voter Harry Otieno has a plan.
I've been in my polling station yesterday, and today I'm going to camp there in the evening. We are going to make sure no any IBC official is in the polling station and no one will enter. We are ready to die. We are ready.
Western Kenya is the home region of opposition leader Raila Odinga, and Kisumu, the region's biggest city, has been the site of some of the fiercest protests during this electoral period. Odinga pulled out of the presidential rerun 2 weeks ago, saying a credible election was not possible. His calls for a boycott has been heard loud and clear in Kisumu. Concerns over violence may also keep voters from the polls.
Even Kisumu is only one language. They will not vote. Whether you are a Jubilee party, whether you are a NASA coalition party, they will not turn up. If they marked the ballot papers and brought it there themselves, let them count and we see how many people vote and how many people did vote.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, the head of the Electoral Commission, Wafula Chebukati, said in the event of violence or logistical problems, they might suspend voting in some areas.
In cases where there will be problems of voting or delivery of materials or there are no materials, the law is very clear. The polling officer will have a right to inform us, and polling can be suspended to another day, or the returning officer can still postpone the election in that area.
Shops were closed in Kisumu Wednesday, and the city was for the most part quiet. However, many residents continued to display branches and leaves attached to the fronts of their cars and motorcycles. The gesture is a show of solidarity with protesters and an indicator of the deep-seated tension still simmering beneath the surface. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Kisumu, Kenya.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We still take you back to Kenya with the song Marina by Sam Mapangala.
Yeah.
We've been listening to Sam Mapangala with the song Marina. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening. If we would like to know what you think about our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.